most important skills that I see is storytelling. Human creativity is something that is unparalleled, and no amount of technology can never sort of go above what human creativity can produce as an end result. So I think storytelling is a very, very important skill to be able to have.
Hello, and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram, and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. Today, you're going to hear a really special episode from New Codes. It's a fashion and innovation conference in London, where I was asked to put together a special live episode of the Women of Web3 podcast. So I've selected some of my favorite powerhouse women who you're going to hear from for a look at the skills of the future.
Delighted to welcome Lauren and Women of Web3 live.
Thank you, Joe. And thank you so much for everybody for coming. And my name is Lauren Ingram. I'm the founder of Women of Web3. And this is a very special live recording of the Women of Web3 podcast. I've got a mix of ex and future guests of the podcast, all on sort of various email chains about it. And this is going to be a very special episode. It's our first time of doing a live episode. If you don't know us already, Women of Web3, we are a community and a consultancy on a mission to educate as many women as possible about all things Web3, blockchain, the metaverse, all of it. And we are connecting women with job opportunities, learning resources like the podcast, and then in-person connections at events. The podcast is one of the top 5% most shared podcasts globally, according to Spotify. Don't know quite how we've managed that, but I mean, I believe Spotify Wrapped. And then in a sort of consulting and education fashion, we've worked with brands like Charlotte Tilbury, Cartier, Shiseido, which I can never quite say out loud, which I ought to be able to by now, and Chanel. So today's session, we're going to be talking about the skills of the future. I know we've already touched on that with the education panel. So I'm going to try to keep things pacey and unique compared to what we've talked about earlier. But essentially, we know that the skills needed to thrive in what comes next, all of that's going to be undergoing a radical transformation in the next sort of 3 to 5 years. I mean, if not right this year, right now. So we've got a trio of the Creative Tech Scene's heavy hitters. This is, as I say, a very special episode. Honestly, I have so much admiration for all these three women, not just because of their amazing sartorial vibes, but I'm really intrigued to hear what they have to say about running their own businesses and the skills they see as critical in what's to come next. So could each of you provide a little bit about yourselves? Holly.
For sure. Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting us, Lauren. Really appreciate it. This is my first moment on your podcast in live. I love it.
Enjoy it.
I am CEO and founder of Hollywood Labs. We are an agency that produce an event called Future Fashion Summit. We just hosted our second event in Paris during Art Basel a couple of weeks ago. Like, it might have even been last week. I'm still kind of like reeling because obviously all of you are fashion people in this room. If you want to like step away from the amazing conversation we're actually going to have, Phoebe Philo has just gone live with her collection.
Oh my God, upstairs. Oh my God, that's what we were looking at.
I was having an absolute moment. But back to what we're actually discussing. So Hollywood Labs. And I've been in the creative industries for the last 20 years across fashion, art, but always working with emerging talent. So quite often with students and emerging artists.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Lauren. My name is Toby Ajala. I am the CEO and founder of TechTea. TechTea is a software house based in London and New York, and we essentially build early adoption-based technology for brands all over the world of all different kinds, predominantly luxury fashion, e-commerce, a little bit of banking and finance, but that's a conversation for another day. And by early adoption, essentially what we do is we build a lot of technology that we see become mass adopted anything from 2 to 5 years later. So for example, we were doing a lot of AI in 2018, 2023, we absolutely saw that explode. And I'm going to keep it that brief.
Thank you. For the third time today, hello everyone. It's really nice to be back on another panel. And thank you, Lauren. I'm really honored to be on your podcast for the second time. So really happy to be here with fantastic women as well, shaping this space. I'm Ashmi. I'm the founder and CEO of Mad Global. We're an innovation-focused creative production agency working at the intersection of fashion and technology. I've been working actually across creative culture for the last 15 years, and I'm also now launching a new venture called Future Plus with the platform soon to launch. We're currently still in stealth, but we've been building slowly but steadily what our tech stack looks like. Also integrates a proprietary AI mechanism, which will all soon to be really revealed. And I'm really excited to be here and talk about the skills that are needed for the future and how we can actually accelerate that.
Amazing. Thank you, Ashmi. So I wanted to kick things off with some quite bold predictions. So can we paint a picture? Okay, so 3 years from now, AI has inevitably transformed the creative and tech industries, maybe not completely, but you know, we've got this rapid pace of change. So what do we think are some of the most in-demand skills at that point? So 3 years from now, we're talking about sort of creative and tech. What do we see as the most in-demand skills?
I was just having a little conversation in the library, and it made me realize that when we first kind of got to the sort of Web3 conversation, specifically for creators, one of the skill sets that was still so in demand was curation. And I see that we still have that. And it was very interesting because we were just talking about AI. And one of the previous speakers had mentioned that a lot of Web3 artists or NFT artists have now just literally jumped into like AI as AI creators. And that means that we still really need curators. You know, this was exactly the problem that I used to have at Rarible, managing kind of like thousands of artists across that front page. How do you highlight and spotlight individual talents and create like actually curated content for a platform that really, you know, is about serving as all of talent that actually wants to, you know, utilize that blockchain technology to share their work with their own audiences. And so I think a lot of the skills that we, you know, that are in demand now are still going to be there, curators, stylists, photographers. It's just this, there's this new layers of tooling, but it's about how we use those tools and how they're adopted.
So one thing about me is I will always go to the foundation of everything, because it begins with software development. And that's forever a constant theme with everything I speak about. So what I feel like I'm going to be nuggeted between these kind of like very fashion-y people, which is great because this fashion is a big part of what we do, but software is at the foundation and the basis of everything that really and truly I care about, but then also what the company produces. And on that note, the number one in-demand skill set is software development technology. I love to have the conversation about to people about how Web3 began because software developers got bored. We iterated past what was made in Web2, and what came next was Web3, naturally a further iteration of the internet. And Web3 and AR and VR and AI and a whole bunch of other things that people are still unaware of but are soon to, that will soon become part of their vocabulary over the next couple of years, I believe. And it's through that I believe software development, specifically C++, PHP, learning very old technologies that some people don't even realize is that important, as well as the fact that some people really think it's boring. But in order for these things to exist, in order for them to be anything that we're talking about today, that's where software development comes into play. I have, my best friend is my niece. She's 2.5. And she's got about 6 months left before she starts coding lessons with me, because I'm getting right back into it. I've got a very big passion, and I talk often about software development in education, because all of the large nations in the world that have huge, bustling software development communities start teaching children at schools. Same way you teach maths, English, science, software is how I believe it should go. Sounds very almost militarian, but by all means, I think it's a core way in which we live today. Everything that is done with software development. So software development is my answer, but very specifically things like JavaScript, PHP, C++, C. I actually think a couple of other software languages are going to come out, and that's not something AI can produce, but that's a conversation we're going to have a little later. So yeah, I can talk about this forever, so I'm just going to stop there.
Thank you. And Ashimi?
So I have two points to make. I definitely agree with you. I think going back to the education piece, I was having a really interesting conversation with Dimitri, actually, who spoke earlier, who's the founder of FaceMe. And we were talking about why there were so many creators, especially across 3D and immersive tech space, XR, that are coming, you know, from the Soviet countries. And that's really because a lot of those countries have put such a big focus on such a young age on STEM, you know, the sciences and technology and maths from a very, very young age. And that's almost sort of integrated into the curriculums. And it's something that they just learn how to do when they're growing up. So it's something that's easy for them to sort of naturally come into these fields. And the second thing I would actually want to say, that one of the most important skills that I see is storytelling. Because I think storytelling across technology, you know, we kind of touched upon earlier as well, human creativity is something that is unparalleled and no amount of technology can never sort of go above what human creativity can produce as an end result. So I think storytelling is a very, very important skill to be able to have wherever technology takes us.
Exactly. And I keep hearing something quoted, which is that we don't want to watch AI playing chess, because, you know, computers can play chess much better than humans can, but you don't want to watch a computer play chess in a tournament. You want to watch humans play against each other. And it's the same when it comes to creativity. We've got these amazing possibilities of what generative AI and all of these tools can do for us, but ultimately it's the kind of what can humans add to that? So actually, if a computer or, you know, AI has all of the possible answers, how do we then sort of sift through and curate what is the kind of most interesting or salient or exciting information and present that in a way that, yeah, builds on human and tech abilities together? So, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say that was so interesting, Ashima, what you were saying about storytelling, because Penguin, for instance, were using a regular AI tool and realized that everything that they were running through it, all of the IP was owned by the AI tool. And so they've literally just started building their own model. And I just think that's really interesting because, like you say, there isn't a way that these tools can actually manufacture like that essence of human creativity. Like, you can't edit a book as well as someone who's been doing that for 20, 30 years. Maybe that will be happening soon, but yeah.
And continuing on the skilling up point, I want to talk about academic institutions. And I know that we talked about this a little bit earlier, or heard about this on the education panel. I mean, academic institutions can be a little bit insulated from what's happening in probably all of your working lives at the moment, and it's quite hard for universities to sort of stay at the bleeding edge of what's going on, which is, in a way, fair enough. I was going to ask whether universities are equipped to give that next generation what they need, skills-wise, but I think actually I'll focus it on what are maybe some tangible ways that people like ourselves, the people in this room today, could look to partner or collaborate with these kind of institutions. Has anybody got any suggestions on that?
I do. Do you want to go first?
No, you can.
Okay. Something really special that we do at Tech Tea is we have a subset of teams called R&D teams. And what we do is a small selection of people, 3, 4, 5, a combination of developers and designers. And essentially, we sit within an organization. And we come up with the best possible, most innovative new solutions there are that are applicable to that business. Take Essence, for example. the luxury Canadian retailer, one of my favorite brands and one of my favorite clients. Just don't tell our other clients that. But what we do with them is we sit with them, and there are four people that have just essence in mind and have the ability to build, design, create, and keep up to date with what's new, what's been released, and we feed that back into essence, and essence alone. What we start from next year is also adopting younger people who are university leavers, people in college, people looking for work experience, to sit with us, because there is a way in which younger people think that once you pretty much cross the age of 25, I think things change a little bit. I think at 25, you kind of realize the world is the world and you kind of have to look after yourself. But prior to that, there's an innocence and a blissful ignorance that comes with, why don't we do that instead? And everybody else will think, we never thought of that. And we are the experts, but there's still a window of creativity that kind of closes as we get older. And that is our way of bringing a younger generation, incorporating an educational element into our business that not only helps us, helps the brands that we work with, helps the businesses that we work with, but also helps those individuals and for those are still going back into education, go back into that education with something fruitful. Because there is no point in taking people in for all the benefit of the people who are older, wiser, richer, and then tossing those people back out into the world. That doesn't make sense, even though that unfortunately is how the majority of the world works. There is a lot for education institutions to do, but that's our own small piece of the world that we're trying to change. And I believe the vast majority of organizations can do something similar, if not very much the same, to educate younger individuals. And it's really just a win-win situation.
I think where technology is concerned, especially across academia and across maybe the R&D departments of those universities, the technology has always been there. I remember last year when, or maybe it was this year actually, when Sam Altman was doing his tour and he was at UAL giving his sort of talk about OpenAI. There was heads of academia from artificial intelligence department who were talking about how everything that they were doing and the work that OpenAI has been doing has already existed for such a long time. But it's always the application across use case that has found quite a large dissonance as to the research that happens within academia and within a lot of the universities versus actually having real life use cases for consumer facing brands or consumer facing products. So I think there has to be a way to be able to merge the two, to have real life applications, to be able to take some of these technologies as well to the wider audiences.
Thanks, Ashmi.
I'm just hoping that we're going to start to see more of a hybrid version of education. It's very challenging for so many people to commit 3 years of their lives plus, let alone funding themselves. And there is incredible kind of resource in all of these universities. University of the Arts is obviously incredible. But I do have huge respect for like self-motivated, self-taught learners. It's one thing that we're always kind of like pushing for is show me the work that you've kind of done for yourself off your own back. No one asked you to do this. No one made you create it. You're creating it because you're a creator for creator's sake. And I think you do absolutely learn the most from doing. I think one criticism of a lot of universities has been, you know, are they teaching students the skills that they actually need? And the answer for me, or from my perspective, is that it's not actually the role necessarily of the, you know, to have that top-down education. it is for students to go to their academics and let them know the areas of interest that they want to specialize in, study in. It's not that they're actually being academically failed by, you know, those things not being on a curriculum. It's actually really important for students to be able to explore their own journey and their own interests. And then for the academic teams to be able to respond to that, whether it's academic or actually, you know, in the technical teams where actually so much more learning gets done quite often.
I definitely, you know, I want to add to that because a lot of the, you know, 3D creators that we've met and we've spoken to, even in the recent past, have all been self-taught. You know, they've come up really because they're curious. A lot of them also just, you know, find ways and tutorials to teach themselves the skills that they need across platform. And they're not afraid to experiment. And, you know, back to your point, I think a lot of young students, I think that that gap is also widening. The people, the young students who are sort of graduating with the degrees don't necessarily end up working with or having roles in the degrees that they're graduating with. So, yes, it is, you know, I do definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I haven't done much with my linguistics degree. But to your point, Holly, I did find that my first sort of year or two of being in the working world, because I didn't have much experience to show for myself other than, you know, sort of like a couple of internships in agencies, but yeah, I was still so green that the thing that stood out on my CV at that point was having run a club night when I was at university. It was an iPod DJ night. Yeah, pretty cool, I know. People had to bring their iPod along. I was going to say iPad. iPod along. And they could sort of request a song and do little, like, DJ battles. But, yeah, it's the kind of taking the initiative to go and do something myself. That was just kind of something I found exciting and fun. I just wanted to bring people together. So, inevitably, I've come and built a business where I bring people together at live events. That's kind of all I had to show for myself when I was 21. I wanted to move things to the commercial creativity, you know, the fields that we're all working in, where that's that kind of intersection of Web3 and more like traditional creativity. We've seen evidently a lot of noise and fearfulness in the mainstream media about what the impact of AI will be on jobs. I get asked that at like dinner parties and things all the time of like, is my job safe? What, you know, what's coming next? And in a way, it's easy to maybe slightly dismiss that fearfulness. But I think, you know, changes are literally happening this year. So what do we think the impact might be on commercial creativity? So things like photography, if you're in production, what kind of changes are you seeing already? And I guess, in a way, should people be nervous for their roles, like what happens to their role?
So we've actually been experimenting with lots of different tools, especially when it comes to production pipelines, whether it's video editing or generating content, especially also with photographers and creative directors and filmmakers. You know, when I started my career about 15 years ago, I remember having similar conversations with the advent of digital and social media. And that being such, that what felt like such a huge leap for a lot of creatives or even photographers and filmmakers who were used to more traditional mediums of using their creativity. But I think now, of course, that incremental shift in the technologies that we're starting to see is exponential, and that's propelling and all sorts of giving a lot of people quite a lot of fear and anxiety around what their roles would look like. But I think that there are a lot of tools, and if those tools are used and implemented in the right way, going back again to the human creativity element, photographers, for example, would have to become more like prompt engineers. I think that maybe the titles would change, but essentially what they would be doing would be quite similar. So one of the things, for example, using Midjourney, let's say, to create photography, the photographer still needs to understand how to create or generate that image and would be able to prompt the machine using very, very technical ways that only he as a very skilled photographer would know, like aperture size and, you know, the speed of the camera that you need to kind of have to get to the final version, the lighting that needs to be used. And you can actually prompt and use all of these specific technical details in the prompt to be able to get your final output. So I think it's just really about reimagining what that role would be. But it's, in a sense, the creative is always going to be the creative.
So I love this question because as I remember someone telling me that my job's going to be taken because of the technology that I built. And it's kind of like, okay. There is something extremely unique about God-given talent. This room is the perfect place to explain this because it's full of people who are creatives and people who are in fashion. There is no system that will ever create some of the things that are created through the boredom of the minds of the people in here. Because that's when real, like some real, very cool creative things come about. The truth of the matter is, yes, software, AI, Web3 technologies are most definitely going to eradicate jobs. It already has. There was a stat, and forgive me for not knowing the exact stat, but it was extremely high in terms of percentage of copywriters who have found themselves out of work this year. Things like copywriting, unfortunately, sorry to any copywriters in the room, it's time to find some other skills because copywriting is so well done on three systems. ChatGPT, this is the style of language, write me a thesis on X, Y, and Z, and it will give you exactly that. For example, with us, copywriting is no longer a service that we require. We write articles as from a software development point of view. Our software developers are complex beings, men and women of few words. So when they write exactly what you need to know, nothing else. However, sometimes when you need to publish a report, you do need to fluff that piece up a little bit. And when you're looking at schedules and timelines and what people have on their plate, things like ChatGPT really does help. And all of a sudden, the difference between a copywriter returning something back to you in X amount of days versus ChatGPT doing it in a matter of seconds, and the difference is, I think it's like $14.99 a month or something like that. It's a no-brainer, and I'm talking from the point of view of somebody with a small business. Larger businesses, that degradation of certain skill sets are going to be a lot slower. However, if you are a creative, if you're an artist, if you use your mind, your hands to bring forth things that have never really existed before, you're not going anywhere. And I know a lot of people want to challenge that and say, yes, but I can put this and this many Basquiats and into Midjourney or whatever, and I can write a few things and outcomes. Toby's Basquiat. Again, it is still not a genuine, true creation. However, it's a version of it, and there is an audience for that. So I'm not saying that that's irrelevant or you should completely disregard that. However, I personally would give anything to see an oil painter in real life paint me. You got me. Name the price. It's done. Ice is cleared. I will pay for that. However, if you tell me, oh, wait here 15 minutes, I'll prompt some things and I'll get you that painting and then we'll print it and then we'll like put it in a frame. It's not the same. Things like art, things like design, creativity, fashion are emotive creations. They require human beings to connect with human beings about these specific subjects or these specific items. And that is where, that's the essence of life. I know I'm getting really like theoretical, but sometimes we just need to kind of push the nonsense to the side and say, all right, let's be for real with each other. What are we talking about here? Would you rather, like, there's no more galleries, it's just digital art? It's never going to be the case. The rating scale of which one is more important than the other or which one is regarded highly, more highly than another, that's a discussion for about 10 years from now, so you've got to come back to me. But for now, everyone's good. Keep creating new, anything that comes to your mind, create it because it is your creation. It is your God-given creation.
I was just going to add a very small point around like creative technologists and how like these different skill sets are actually quite separate. And to your point, Ashumi, about being a prompt engineer, I would absolutely need someone to sit with me. I'd kind of have a vision as a creative person and something in my mind visually. I'm just a visual person. that I would not know the right, like even just Googling something, I am the worst. So like this idea of kind of almost like matchmaking skill sets, it would be amazing to kind of like see more collaborations happen between technologists and creators. And the same way we see this in digital fashion and like luxury fashion, you know, the two talk the same, you know, they talk about fashion or clothing, but they are actually talking in different languages. They don't necessarily understand what the other does. So yeah, this is why we, you know, these conversations are so important. But yeah, those kinds of collaborations and those like moments for that fusion, I think that kind of like those sort of when there can be a gathering of these different ideas, but then have a series of outcomes for them.
Thank you, Holly. Just building on that, I would say that prompt engineering, to me, a lot of it is briefing skills that, like, if you've been, I've never been a strategy director in an agency, but it's that kind of equivalent of like the clearer you can be about what your brief is and what endpoint you're trying to get to, the easier it is for whether it's a human or a piece of tech that's doing the work to get that output that you so desire. I'm very conscious of time. I'm getting the look. I wanted to finish on how you hire yourselves as founders. You're all successful founders in this space. Where do you tend to look for talent? So Holly and I, when we were discussing this previously, we were saying a lot of great talent actually comes from our own networks of just WhatsApping people who sort of say, does anybody know a social media manager who can do this, this, and this, or maybe has experience doing X? Where are you tending to find people, and are they already trained up in your sort of specific niche, or are you happy to train them on the job?
I'll just say I absolutely love LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn's an amazing tool. I do tons of stalking, tons of connecting. I'm always surprised what kind of feedback you get and how high up you can reach into an organization. So I would say LinkedIn's amazing, but your profile needs to kind of like match the merit of the, you know, the conversation that you want to have. I don't think it's fair to waste someone's time. If you can't be bothered to spend a proper amount of time making a great LinkedIn profile, these things take time and effort. It's like a great CV. Like it takes time. Doing a good job application takes a long time. But yeah, LinkedIn and then WhatsApp, Telegram groups. Interestingly, I might put a shout out for a particular type of, you know, a role or a skill set that I need. But it will end up being like friend of a friend. It will kind of like go outside of my immediate circle, which I actually quite like, because then there's kind of like, it's actually you're getting like new fish in the pool.
I am a child of Instagram. I was on Instagram in 2011 and I never went back. So that is a really good place for me to find any and everyone. Developers, designers, photographers, videographers, creatives. It's endless because there are so many Instagram accounts. And that's my way of being very passive at recruitment and hiring and building a future team. I look on Instagram for people every day that I won't need for another 6 months, 1 year, or I come up with an idea and I go on Instagram to see if there are people who have created elements of what I was, or part of what I was thinking, and then I would keep a list to contact those people when the time is right. However, in very typical leadership fashion, when there is a need, you go to your network. I mean, I think I've come to you, Lauren, before. And it's just been a case of, hey, I'm looking for so-and-so, do you know? Which is great, because you've got someone that essentially is vetted, somebody that you know is coming from somebody that you trust. So automatically you have a level of trust with that person. But for the sake of outreach, for the sake of younger people, for the sake of the world is very, very large, but also very, very small in the same vein, I do the Instagram thing. So it's a combination of my network and the people that I've found over the years via Instagram, which I've never said on a stage before.
Yeah, I second what you got, both of you said as well about just having that personal network. And, you know, we've been very lucky to have people approach us sometimes with, you know, for roles, and we get CVs of people. But I actually think that roles are you know, the whole idea of having like a quote unquote role is a little bit antiquated. I lean a little bit more into people's personality types, and just, you know, being able to be resourceful and agile. And that's basically the two skills that I look for the most. And that's the culture that we have at MAD. So
thank you. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for all three of you. You're absolute powerhouses. So I've been delighted to have you join me on stage. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. I've been your host, Lauren Ingram. Please do give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps more women, more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to come and join our talent collective and get your profile seen by potential Web3 employers, or you can choose to be anonymous if you prefer. If you're a company that's looking to understand Web3 better, or you want to support women in this space, do get in touch with us on our website. And if you've got any questions, any comments, tweet us at womenofweb3co or find us on LinkedIn, and we'll see you next Tuesday morning.